Penguin Random House Audio presents Testimony by Robbie Robertson. Read for you by McLeod Andrews. I was introduced to serious storytelling at a young age, on the Six Nations Indian Reserve. The oral history, the legends, the fables, and the great holy mystery of life. My mother, who was Mohawk and Cayuga, was born and raised there. Whether it was traditional music or story songs like Lefty Frizzell's The Long Black Veil or sacred mythologies told to us by the elders, what I heard on the reserve had a powerful impact on me. At the age of 9, I told my mother that I wanted to be a storyteller when I grew up. She smiled and said, "I think you will." So these are my stories. This is my voice, my song. And this is what I remember. 1. Stared out that train window into the darkness till I near went stone blind. I patted out a rhythm on my knee and smiled to myself. Sounded like a song from the very place I was headed. I was spellbound, gazing out the train window at silhouettes of passing towns, a blur of nocturnal landscapes streaming by. Only the lights were changing. Small town shadows stirring quietly, city neon coloring the night sky, one scene blending into another. I'd been awake for many hours, but I was too wound up to sleep, too nervous, no, too buzzed. Me and that train were headed to the holy land of rock and roll, to the fountainhead, where the music I loved grew right out of the ground. This was a southbound train. Spring 1960, 16 years old, I was traveling from Toronto, Ontario to Fayetteville, Arkansas, toward my chance to try out for a job playing with Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks, the most wicked rock and roll band around. Ronnie was a big rockabilly recording artist, an amazing showman with a fresh, Frankie Lane-type voice. The Hawks were a powerhouse band with perfect casting. They looked as authentic as they sounded. Sideburns, slicked back hair, Memphis cool, one part country gentleman, three parts southern wild men. I kept staring out that passenger car window in wonderment. I'd never been this far from home before. Every time the train whistle blew, a chill ran through me. I tried to close my eyes but couldn't sleep. This was all too new, too unimaginable, too dreamlike. Because it occurred to me, people from my background didn't hardly know how to dream. I remember the exact day it all turned around for me. I had just stepped out the side door of St. Teresa's Catholic grade school when it hit me. A vicious combination of driving wind, burning ice needles to the face, and blinding snow. You couldn't see more than a few feet in front of you. The public school lay between my school and my house, and it was plainly understood that you took your life in your hands with the kids who went there if you cut through that schoolyard. But in this storm, I had to risk it. The sleet was pushing me to the ground every few steps. So I set myself on a direct line for enemy territory, hoping none of those tough older kids could possibly be out in this blizzard. I thought, even Eskimos don't go out in this. But then I spotted a figure in the distance. I was already halfway across the schoolyard, no turning around now. As I got closer, I saw that the guy was big, and he was coming toward me. My heart was pounding from wading through the snow and being pushed back by the wind, and now from fear. He stumbled toward me, shielding his face with his scarf like a mask. Oh man, what does he want? But when I reached him, he merely stuck out his hand, holding a paper flyer, and gestured for me to take it. I blinked. Then I took the paper, stuffed it in my pocket, and kept moving. By the time I reached the side door of my house, I looked like a zombie who had just crossed the Arctic Circle. My mother was there to greet me, saying, "Goodness, get in here! You must be frozen!" While hanging up my coat, she pulled the flyer out of my pocket and read it aloud. "Music lessons. Accordion, violin, Spanish, and Hawaiian guitar." Oh, are you interested in taking lessons? I shook the snow from my hair. Sure, anything if it means I never have to walk through a blizzard like this again. I was already drawn to music, and now wondered if maybe it could help me find a way out of this frozen hellscape. But not accordion, I added. Lawrence Welk and all. She laughed. Okay, big dreamer, and handed me a hot chocolate. This was a turning point. I just didn't know it yet. As the train idled at the Buffalo border crossing from Canada into the States, an immigration officer walking through the carriage asked me where I was going. It was a tricky moment. If I mentioned anything about a job, he'd turn me back. I was trembling inside, but with a straight face, I told him I was going to visit my brother and his family in Arkansas. He glanced at my birth certificate, then looked me dead in the eye. I just about swallowed my gum. After a pause, he said, "Have a good trip," and walked on. As the train pulled away from the station and we crossed into the U.S., a wave of sadness came over me as I remembered what I'd had to do to get the money to make my way south. Ronnie was looking to replace the guitarist or the bassist in his band, and he had told me, "Come on down here and we'll see if it works out." This was my chance to convince him I was his man, so I thought it best not to ask him for any train money. Nor did I want to bother my mother, who'd given me a rough time about quitting school. In the end, there was only one thing to do. I had to sell my prized 1958 Fender Stratocaster with the original classic sunburst body. She was a real beauty. I'd worked so hard to get her, saving up for months. But now, I had to do whatever it took to get to Arkansas. I was on a mission. But leaving that beloved Strat behind cut deep. The first time I saw Ronnie and the Hawks perform, it was a revelation. I was only 15, and Ronnie was playing the Dixie Arena in the West End of Toronto. The band I was in, the Swades, was opening. We'd been playing around Toronto for a few months, and opening for Ronnie Hawkins was the biggest thing we'd ever done. After that night, I would look at music in a whole different light. We had a strong lineup of players in our own group. Our drummer then was Pete the Bear Duramigas. He had a unique rolling and tumbling feel to his playing and hummed along unconsciously while he played, like a human kazoo. Pete Trainer, or Thumper, played bass. I'd known him since I was 13 when we played together in the Rhythm Chords, the first band I ever hooked up with. We called him Thumper because of the way he manhandled the instrument. Pete would play and stare at you steadily, hardly ever looking at his hands. It made for a strange and powerful musical connection. Sometimes it got so intense I had to look away. Scott Magoo Cushney, our piano man, was 21, and he had more musical training than the rest of us, as well as a sharp sense of humor and a fascinating inventory of slang words that he never shied from busting out. Some of them he invented, and some could be attributed to his devotion to the popular off-the-wall Bob and Ray radio show. I played lead guitar and sometimes sang, but for the Dixie Arena gig, we had Johnny Rhythm on vocals. Johnny was part street hustler, part show bar rock and roll impersonator, but the guy could sing like a bird. That night, we played pretty good, and from the stage, we could see Ronnie and his boys checking us out, which made us all reach a little higher. But when the Hawk took the stage, the whole atmosphere changed. The audience, which had been lingering around, chatting, now crowded the front of the stage. Suddenly you could taste something raw and authentic in the air. The band was all dressed in black and red outfits. When they exploded into their first song, Wild Little Willie, the Hawk prowled the stage like a caged animal. He soared over Will Pop Jones's piano, growling a primitive war cry and miming a cranking motion behind Will's back, like an organ grinder winding up his monkey. Will was oblivious. He was living inside the music, chewing gum to the rhythm, sweat flying, eyes crossed, head thrown back, hands pumping those ivories. Jimmy Ray Luke Palman's Gretsch Country Gentleman guitar, with its flat-wound strings, poured on the rhythm. When Luke fired into a solo,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?